is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight. We know your attention is diverted elsewhere because, well, you know, the most important soccer game in the country is happening right now. But that's all right. If you're listening to us live, we appreciate it. If you're listening to us on the podcast later this week, we still appreciate it. You are listening to the Unused Substitutes Show. We are your green and gold gospel, your best source for year-round Rowdies coverage. Coming at you live on Radio St. Pete Online and part of the Beautiful Game Network. We are presented in part by Roughneck Scarves and Taco Bus. My name is Stephen Cundiff. I feel so much better than what I was feeling this weekend. And thankfully, tonight, I'm not alone. Daniel Andonino, he's here with me too. Sir, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you with the whole COVID thing?
So much better.
Good.
Actually, I'm actually back up to 100% basically.
Okay, good.
Yep. It's basically just a fever. I didn't even give it a thought as far as it being COVID when it first, like, because essentially after the show Wednesday night last week. Now, mind you, my air conditioner had been broken and out for about a week leading up to that. And so, like, my apartment was just awful. You know, it did not feel good. I had a portable AC unit for the office, but I didn't notice sometime after the show stopped last week. The exhaust fan fell out of the window, like the exhaust tube.
Yeah.
So I'm out in the other part of the apartment. It's like already warm-ish because obviously like there's no AC on out there. So I'm just chilling after the show. I'm you know, just, you know, eating dinner or whatever. And like I'm just getting more and more uncomfortable. Like it's midnight and it's 86 degrees. And I'm like, what the heck? This is awful. So I thought I was just hot, and I was thinking maybe it was just a bad weather day, right? Like maybe it was just some record-breaking heat. There wasn't any rain on Wednesday here from where I was. So I was like, maybe it's just hot. So I tried going to bed. I couldn't really go to sleep. It's like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. I've been just miserable the whole time. And I'm like, you know, I'm wondering if that thing fell out. So I happen to walk into the office at 3 a.m. and sure enough, there's the tube on the floor. And I'm like, you bastard. This is why it's 86 degrees at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's like, you suck. So I tape the damn thing back in and turn on the AC, decide to like crash in the office where the AC is actually like working at that point. And so, yeah, so it's like it's funny because like I woke up at Thursday morning and I felt like 4 hours of sleep. I felt pretty good. It's like nice and cool. It was like, I think I'm good. I think I'm fine. And then as Thursday went on, like I could just feel like something was wrong as Thursday went. So I didn't even give it a thought as it being COVID until the weekend, because somebody had mentioned it. Somebody ended up mentioning it on Friday. They were like, do you have COVID? And I'm like, I didn't even think about that, because I was thinking maybe it was just me being sick from the circumstances of my apartment.
Yeah.
But yeah, Friday was probably, Friday was the actual like legit bad day. I was so feverish. Thankfully there was no cough. There was nothing, anything like that at all. No coughs, no nose issues, no breathing issues of any kind. Literally the only symptom I had was a fever. That was it.
Well, that's good. I'm glad I wasn't crazy.
Yeah. So Saturday I was on the mend and I had tested positive. That's when I was like, oh yeah, that's obviously what it was. But yeah, Saturday was doing good. Sunday I was almost back to normal. And by end of day Monday, I was 100%. So I don't know. That was fun. Very random.
Well, I'm glad you're better. And we had a fun match on Saturday to both watch from a distance. It was good times.
That's right, because you tried to go watching a rocket launch for a rocket that apparently can't take its fuel.
Yeah. It's constant problems. It was also... Casey's dad always does a college football kickoff party, which was the main reason we were going over there. The rocket was going to be a bonus, but obviously not for anybody.
It was a fun weekend of college football.
We watched the Michigan game. They're diehard Michigan fans, so we watched that. And then there's another game on. Rutgers was playing, and I just had PTSD seeing Greg Schiano on a sideline. I did not want to remember those days.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. What did I watch? I watched that App State game. I tweeted about it. The Appalachian State game. That was, like, stupid. North Carolina, App State.
I saw the score, and I was like, what the heck is happening?
App State scored something like 30 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like, what? that game was just dumb, because it was like, and it was funny because you saw a lot of that over the weekend in general, and this is what makes college football so good, is like you always get these like crazy comeback games. I mean, how many games did we see where it was like one team is within the 10-yard line, or they're kicking an extra point, or they're trying to go for two to either tie the game and send it to overtime or win the game? There was like, what, like a good six games that literally the last play of the game decided the game. Like, it was a pretty fun weekend. There was obviously a lot of blowouts because there's like, you know, 274 million freaking college teams out there. But, you know, there's a lot of blowouts. But like, it was fun. It's good having American football back.
Yeah, as I'm sitting here doing my NFL fantasy draft right now while doing the show.
There you go.
We are in, for an update, we're in round 5, and I think it was round 3 when somebody drafted a kicker. So that's how this is going.
Oh, it's one of those groups of people. Okay, all right.
It's Casey's sister. She doesn't know what she's doing.
Well, oh, shit. Trying to think, when's the earliest I've ever drafted a kicker? Ah, man, it's been so long since I've done fantasy football, I don't even remember.
I haven't played in so long, and then I had the first pick in the draft, and I was like, where's Drew Brees? Where's LaDainian Tomlinson?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Where are the players I know to draft number one? It's weird. I don't know who half these people are that I'm drafting.
Oh,
whatever.
Man.
It'll be fun.
It is funny, like, how much the game of football has changed in just, even, like, just 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's crazy.
It's wild. It really is wild how much you have to keep up with all the new players coming in, because it really does rotate about every, like, probably every 3 or 4 seasons. I got a feeling that like most of your wide receiver running back cores change drastically.
Yep.
Man, I do not miss the days of playing fantasy. That was a lot of homework. Man,
yeah,
that was
Casey has notebooks, and I was just laughing at her because I'm winging it.
Yeah, right. And inevitably, like, you'll end up with like third place or something like that. Not even trying. It's always good. You know, another team that didn't really have to try and end up having a really easy weekend would be our Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Yeah.
That was a that was an exercise this weekend. Can we call it a game? I don't even think we can call it a game. We just call it an exercise.
Yeah, it was a scrimmage. It was very much a scrimmage. It just effortless. And that's what you want to see, especially with a team like Las Vegas coming here. Like, that's what we need to do. We need to take care of business like that. And it was a lot of fun. It was a goal fest. I heard the mob ran out of smoke, so that's a good time.
They shouldn't have. At least last time.
They might have ran out for the game.
Probably just decided not to use up, like, they probably could have used all of it if they really wanted to with six goals. Good times. That's fun.
It is. I love it.
All right. So, your Tampa Bay Rowdies played Las Vegas Lights. It ended up being a blowout of a final score of 6-1. So we're going to dive into that here. Before we get there, our shows are not possible without the support of our Patreon executive producers. Tonight, that person is David Morales. And we appreciate you, David, for the long support that you've had of us, of the show.
Let's not get crazy. I don't appreciate David. Let's be real. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, ouch.
The feud is still going. I'm keeping it alive now.
Ouch, man.
He's great. He's great.
Okay. All right. Well, I love you, David, so it's okay. All right. If you want to tweet us during the show or during the week, maybe during game days, whenever. I mean, maybe tonight because, of course, Matt is in Orlando. I hate having to say that word. At Unused Subs Pod is the Mothership Twitter account. That's the best place to reach all three of us for anything that you've got, Tampa Bay Rowdies. If you want to discuss it with us or shoot some banner around, that's where you can find us. So the Rowdies, 6-1. Now, in this match, right off the bat, first thing we can look at is, I mean, obviously, it always starts with lineup, but in this case, it starts with formation. And Neil Collins very plainly realized that he was going to absolutely wreck this team, this Las Vegas Lights team, because we came out with a four-back system. And when we've come out with a four-back system against bad teams, usually that ends up playing like a two-back system. And yeah, that's kind of what it ended up almost looking like this weekend. Was basically a two-back system.
Yep.
And it was great. It was legitimately great. So, obviously Cochran and Nett, but Castellanos and Jordan Scarlett were your two big men in the back. With Lawrence Wyke and Aaron Guillen as well, pushing up along the outsides pretty healthily. Jordan Scarlett had five, I don't want to call them game saving tackles because it was a 6-1, you know, final score. I don't know if you could really call them game saving or game changing, but he had a good four or five amazing tackles this past weekend.
I was going to say you could see me nodding, but apparently my camera is not working. Correct. But yeah, it was, I mean, he was on one. Like, it was Jordan's, despite the six goals, I mean, and he got one of them, it was the Scarlett show, in my opinion. Like, he showed up and showed out, and it was so good to see. I enjoyed it. As somebody who loves defense and defenders, I absolutely enjoyed watching that kind of performance from him. So all of the plaudits for that one. You know, there's obviously it's almost a season past, but the way that final ended, his mistake, you worried about confidence. We've seen it with Seba this season. The confidence is gone after, you know, you could probably pinpoint that missed penalty as a thing. But Jordan is back. He's like after that performance, and it's been growing. Like, you know, he's been, Neil's been managing him a bit too. There's been games where he's come off the bench or whatever. But Jordan Scarlett is back, and that was a heck of a performance, and I absolutely loved it. And kudos to him for making Team of the Week along with Leo Fernandez. Well deserved.
Yeah, and 100%. I mean, I think the best moment of him for Jordan this weekend was the double tackle. I believe Jennings had gotten a through ball. Scarlett makes a tackle. I mean, he's probably 35 yards out from net. Makes a tackle, slows him down, but doesn't get the ball, but doesn't foul him. Jennings is able to recover his feet and continue on towards the net. So I still can't figure out how Scarlett was able to get back up, get the pace back, recover the run, and was able to make a second slide tackle in the six, or almost to the six, to prevent Jennings from getting that final shot against Cochran. I cannot, for the life of me, figure out how he managed to recover on that play.
Me neither.
I mean, I rewatched that a good four or five times. I don't get it. That was just a miracle. And super sketch defense. I mean, I don't want to call it super sketch. I hate doing that. But I'm going to do it. Super sketch defending decision, too. Making that second slide tackle came at a bad angle in the box against a guy that was about to shoot the ball on net. I mean, you miss that at all, and it's basically a red.
Yep.
I mean, he had to be flawless in that tackle, not just to win the ball, but just avoid the card. And somehow managed to do it. Huge props to him for that play.
Yeah, sorry, I was on the clock. I had to get my picks in. Yeah, it was just he was the best player on the pitch for us, in my opinion. Leo, obviously great, and you could make shouts for other players in a game like that. But he could do no wrong, really. Like on tackles like that, everything had to be like moment perfect, like just pitch perfect, everything, and just he nailed it. And I will. It was just fun to watch as somebody again who appreciates defense, and we need more. If Jordan Scarlett's coming into that, if that's going to be his form in this late season run, Castellanos is back. He seems to have found his footing quite quickly. The league is, you know, maybe our defense is back. Maybe the shakiness that we had in the last, you know, in a few games here and there, maybe we can move beyond that and make that deep run to the final. I'm hopeful. I mean, our offense seems to be, you know, and the midfield seems to be solid. Just stay healthy and make this late season push, and maybe we can have that second seed, because, again, I don't want that first seed. But, you know, I'll take it if it happens. But as long as we're not top in the league. But I'm looking forward to this late run here. Like, clock's ticking. I forget that it's September and we're almost to the playoffs. It doesn't click in my head sometimes how late in the year it actually is.
Yeah, there's only a few games left.
Yeah.
It really is scary to consider that there's only 7 games left before the Tampa Bay Rowdy season is over. It's not a lot.
No.
It's not a lot of games. So, I think another deserved shout-out, though, is Castellanos, because in that two-back system, I mean, essentially what we were running was a 2-6-3. For everything Scarlett had done, though, Castellanos did just as good all night. He's looking exactly like the defender we were hoping he was going to be. He's looking exactly like the defender we needed to start the season back there with Forrest Lasso going to Sweden. I thought he had a fantastic game as well. I had no issue at all. And it just, his presence on this team, I mean, he may be the difference maker as far as a deep play. You know, we were talking about like what a deep playoff run looks like. Castellanos is probably the difference player at the moment.
Yeah,
I agree. I think he's going to end up being the guy that if we can make a deep playoff run, I think he's the reason why.
Yep. I can't argue that. We needed that consistency and that solid defender in that spot. Not that Connor wasn't up to the task. Not that Wyke wasn't up to the task. They're better suited elsewhere. And I mean, this was the game plan going in, right? Like, Castellanos was the guy that was at the start of the season, and unfortunately we had to deal with that long-term injury. But now we're seeing the vision that Neil had coming in, and it's finally all coming together at the right time. And him, Castellanos coming back is huge for this team. Not just like, I think he just brings that stability and the vision and the poise of the natural center back. And I think you can probably credit him with like steadying Jordan Scarlett. Like, Jordan was probably the one that, you know, he was used to having Lasso there to communicate with and Guillen, but like having different people come in and out, no stability there as somebody, you know, you're used to that same back line, and then all of a sudden it's chaotic. You get used to how to play off other people. And I think Jordan Scarlett is great playing off of that, like, Forrest Lasso, Castellanos type player, of where he can make the run off and cover that back tackle if the player gets past that center back and come in and make that last ditch tackle. His speed, like his pace, can help there, and his vision. So it helps. There's just so many things that we can take for granted or we can miss, but I think having that type of player as a center back is going to be great for Guillen and Jordan Scarlett as well.
And of course, having Antley back in the midfield makes all the difference in the world. He is such a difference maker for the Rowdies in a more offensive role. It's something we struggled all year with. Something I've harped on repeatedly on this show. And you see it again. You know, this is a game where we had 24 shots by the end of the night. 10 of those on target. I mean, a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, it's not just, you know, you have a defense that's obviously suffocating, but it's not just that back line. You see Guillen, you see Hilton. They absolutely destroyed the ability of Las Vegas whenever they got the ball. They could not move up the field at all. You know, they took 2 touches, maybe 3, whether it's, I mean, take the first goal, for example, right? The first goal, which was a Jordan Scarlett, deep finish, it came off a corner kick. But the corner kick wasn't necessarily good. Las Vegas ended up getting it and started dribbling it out of the box, and we had 2 or 3 guys track them down.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's where right now, like, that's a huge difference with this club compared to lesser teams is just the pure physical nature of the way we play. And, you know, that comes down to having people like Antley in the midfield who has the pace, has the defensive acumen to just destroy potential counterattacks, destroy potential opposing build-up play. They're so good at that. And, you know, I think that ended up being the reason why, like, Las Vegas, by the end of the night, only had 3 shots. That's it. 3. And one of them was a breakaway that Jennings... it wasn't a breakaway, but Jennings, it was a long-range, just kind of wonder blast.
Yep.
You know, you take that away, it was 2 shots besides that one random deep bomb shot. I'll take that all day. Yeah, it was an unbelievable performance by the midfield. And, man, our strikers, our forward, our top 3... Guenzotti is still snake bit, but Fernandez, Lacava, Dos Santos, and of course, Mr. 100, Lucky M. Cassana. I mean, some of those goals were just fantastic.
Yeah.
You know,
you mentioned...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned Connor Antley being back in the midfield. He served up beautiful ball that was hammered home. I forgot by who. Too many goals to count for me to keep track, but I just remember my exact tweet was he served it up like he was a contestant on Chopped. Like, he just put that on a platter and it was absolutely beautiful. He's just having that ability to off the midfield to deliver that in is something underrated. Lucky's goal is obviously the one that stands out in my head because it was just everything about that moment was perfect. There was Leo, Dos Santos. It was just chef's kiss perfect. I hope we have some goals in us in the next week, but, you know, we'll see.
You know, Dos Santos gets the goal on a set-piece play, which... is just good. We've struggled at times to get reliable set piece shots on target. It's not something the team has done very well this year for whatever reason. So not only having one like legitimately get a shot on goal, but then also to score it as a substitute, lots of really good moments there for Dos Santos on that particular sequence. And I know by the end of the night, everybody was obviously really, really, really psyched about the fact that Lucky scored that goal on his 100th appearance, which is amazing. It's great. We love it. But can we talk about the pass? Leo Fernandez's pass to Lucky M. Cassana was an absolute god-tier piece of distribution. He splits the defense right down the middle because the one defender is not angled correctly for a pass. Like, he doesn't know that Lucky's making a run behind him. So Leo finds that gap and basically passes it in a spot where the one defender, even though he's literally right there, is looking the wrong way and will never have enough time to get his body, his center of gravity pushed back around to be able to intercept that pass. And Lucky is just in at that point. That was absolutely perfection of a pass on that play. It was unbelievable. It was so, so, so pretty. And it's funny because that play kind of goes under the radar because, that was the 6th goal. It was Lucky's 100th. But, I mean, offensively speaking, that was my offensive play of the game, was Leo's pass to Lucky. It has. He really has had just a monumental impact, not just in goals scored, but just in everything that he has done this season. Yeah, I mean, his impact has been felt across the field since Neal shifted him more into a striker type role in this this three front system that we've had. And, you know, it harkens back to when we were talking about this team in preseason and what that the three front system would look like. And one of my criticisms was you need to have a player drop back to, you know, catch some of those balls. They can't all just, because the problem with a three front system is that typically, like, the players will just hang on the opposing back line and they're just looking for balls up to them. And that creates this, like, easy to defend static situation. You need to have players drop out and drop back from that position to collect balls in, because you don't really have a designated center attacking mid in that situation. Leo has done that exceptionally, and all of them have, really. But Leo has done a very, very good job of breaking that play up, you know, breaking that kind of look, that formation of that front three up enough where he's creating space by moving to the ball no matter where that ball is. You know, he's not, and that's the key, is you don't want to create an attack that's very singular in dimension. You don't want to just have people looking for through balls and you're just standing on the back line, because that's, that kind of repetition is easy to defend. And so having him be as dynamic as he has been, having Jake LaCava be as dynamic as he has been over this course of the season, that's what's made the difference for the Rowdies. And it's fun because we hope that continues. There's only 7 games left. Playoffs are about to start. You know, if that kind of dynamic play is happening, you have to imagine this team's going to make a deep playoff run.
Yeah. I think that there's so much going on up front, and this team has been deep in the attacking and in the attacking front all year. The problem has been not getting the combo in the midfield correct, like able to get that combination in the midfield because of the defensive problems. But it's all coming together, and I think Dalgard and Harris on one side with Antley on the other, with Leo free roaming and LaCava, and then the center, like Dos Santos or even Seba, who plays a different way than Dos Santos, but seems to have found a way into that lineup and work well with LaCava and Leo. It's been fun to watch that. It's so many times over the course of the years of watching this team, the attack felt very rigid. It always felt like get to the edge of the 18, cross it, and then like that was it. And Neal has kind of taken the reins off and has let the creative players up top be creative. And it's just, the Rowdies are a fun attacking team, which I don't think has happened until the last like 2 years, especially this year. I've had a lot of fun. You never know where the goals are going to come from, which is the thing. Like, it used to be pretty predictable. We knew like Georgie Ristoff had, like, if Georgie didn't score, we didn't really have secondary scoring back in the day. And then like now, anybody up top is going to score, and then you might even get a defender goal. It's so fun to watch right now. I'm loving it.
You know, we were talking about like who is the most dangerous team in the playoffs, and last week during the show, and if you know the playoffs had ended then, and you know, we were talking about like, you know, maybe it's Pittsburgh, or not Pittsburgh, maybe it's Birmingham, because maybe they're catching some fire at the right time, that maybe that might be the team to avoid. But you know, it's funny to think about, like, the Rowdies, I got a feeling most teams would consider the Rowdies to be a team that they wouldn't want to face in particular in the playoffs. And in a performance like that against Las Vegas, if you can keep doing those kinds of performances going into this last month and a half of the season, oh man, that's going to just, yeah, that's going to put a lot of teams on edge walking into late October.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm down to, I think I have 2 picks left. Yeah, I got 2 picks left.
Oh yeah.
It's time for joke picks.
Yeah.
My team's kind of the joke picks.
Oh, man. Well, okay. Right now, who's your starting quarterback?
My starting quarterback is Lamar Jackson.
All right. Congratulations.
Oh. I'm about to jokingly ask Trevor Lawrence just for giggles.
Oh, man.
Can't draft Tim Tebow anymore like I used to do for my jokes, but
we would always when I was doing fantasy football, this was back when Billy Cundiff was still in the league. And so whatever the league I was always a part of, that always had to be my last pick of my draft was always Billy Cundiff for obvious reasons.
Yeah, there'll never be an Endonino in the league, so I just jokingly always took Tim Tebow and let him sit on my bench.
The irony, of course, about Billy is that I'm not directly related to him. You'd have to go back a few centuries, because he comes from the side of my family that settled in Kentucky when they came to the New World. My side of the family, my legit direct lineage, comes from the Virginia side. So. And of course, you know, it's for those lacking in geography, those states border each other. It's just a matter of which side of the mountain ridge line you're on. But yeah, there's a lot of Cundiffs out there that you'd have to go back to England 500 years ago at a minimum to make an actual bloodline connection with a lot of Cundiffs, because they're completely different branches of the family. They're completely different. We're not at all directly related unless you go back, 500 plus years.
No, if you ever meet another Endonino, they are directly related to me.
Yeah. My name's Dan Endonino. There's three of us. There's three Endoninos in the world.
I don't know if there's another Daniel Endonino in the world. I know there's about 12 or 14 of us in the United States, and that's all Endoninos in general. So, yeah.
Well, final thought from me for this weekend's game has to go to Drew Felios for the amazing thanks and the words of affirmation he gave out on the broadcast. I put it out on Twitter that I wasn't going to the game because I was, sick with COVID, and just to make sure people knew where I was, right? No big deal. But yeah, Drew, thank you so much. That was so nice for everything you said during the broadcast, wishing me well and hoping I'd make a good recovery. That was totally unexpected. I had no idea you were going to be doing that. So that was a really, really cool moment. I was definitely encouraged by it, so I really appreciate that. That was really awesome of you. All right.
We were in the car coming home, and he said it, and we had it hooked up to Casey's audio on the car, and we were just like, that was amazing. That was really good.
Yeah. That was so awesome. Oh, my God. It was funny because, on our group chat, I'm like, what the heck just happened? that was really cool. I was definitely not expecting that. Yeah. Well, I'll say this. What you can expect is Taco Bus, who always and proudly delivers a healthy, fresh, and authentic Mexican taste experience to our Florida fans. Just one bite of a burrito, tostado, or quesadilla, and your taste buds will be singing traditional Mexican folk songs. Visit us today at one of our 11 locations, and remember to keep it chido. All right, so we mentioned earlier some team league news of the week type update. Jordan Scarlett and Leo Fernandez were both on Team of the Week. Lewis Hilton was on the bench as an honorable mention for Team of the Week this past weekend. So congratulations to all three of those guys on the recognition. Absolutely well-deserved. It's funny because the USL's official like announcement for that, you know, for the Team of the Week mentions Scarlett's goal and some of his like passing statistics, but doesn't mention the amazing double tackle against Jennings. It's like, guys, that was literally the play of the game for him. That's the reason why he should be on this Team of the Week. What are you doing? Ah, defenders. They only get the honor if they score goals. It's so sad.
I know. It's so annoying. Defenders are people too. Stop the discrimination.
Just allow them to be Team of the Week for having a really good couple of tackles. Like, why do you always give Teams of the Week for players that score goals when they're defenders? Anyways, it's like Fot Mob always giving better numbers for defenders because they score goals. And it's like, that should be so secondary. It's not a thing.
Yeah, defenders shouldn't get higher ratings for scoring goals. I mean, it's great if they do, but their whole purpose is to not allow goals.
Yeah.
And if they do that, that's good.
Yeah. It's like if the opposing team has like five or less shots, then all of the defenders get like an extra like, you know, 2.2 points of bonus on a 10 scale or something like that. Like they should just automatically be that much better just because the opposing team doesn't have a lot of shots in general. Defenders. They never get rated right. It's so sad. It's frustrating.
Tell us how you really feel.
moving on. Now, in other league news outside of the Rowdies, there's a couple things that are going on. Obviously, the Open Cup is happening as we're on the air. I'm not going to do any kind of live scoring updates because that's just, I don't like doing it. Because if you're listening to us on podcast on Thursday, who cares what the live score is? You already know what the score is. The game is over. Anyways. Something came out today, earlier today, that was an update from Orange County. Now, we talked about this a few weeks ago because there was, you know, as always, there's always like more to the story type of deal. There's been some sleuthing, some investigations that have been going on with some fans and reporters in Irvine. It's looking not good for Orange County Soccer Club. As we know, a few weeks ago, it came out that LA Galaxy 2 was apparently trying to muscle their way into the facility. It came out later. Well, it came out during that meeting that apparently that conversation happened a long time or started a long time ago, according to the city manager. Well, an investigation that happened since then with some freedom of information type requests turns out that that was true. They had been talking for like 4 or 5 months. And in that discussion, it came out where the incentive for all of this was really coming from. So, like, City of Irvine gets about $195,000 a year from the current arrangement with Orange County and Cal Strikers United. Well, they were going to get like kind of less than that with LA Galaxy 2 with their proposal, but LA Galaxy 2's president or whatever, you know, a lot of their hot, you know, top wigs are also on the planning committee for Los Angeles and the World Cup. And apparently the real apple on the stick, from what we're gathering, is during the World Cup, they're hoping to rent out that soccer park for World Cup purposes, in which case they would be renting out the facility for like $105,000 per day.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Now, why it'd be $105,000 per day? I don't know. It kind of smells like it's just a, hey, FIFA's rich, let's just charge them literally whatever we want and they'll pay because they're FIFA and they don't care. But that was my big takeaway from where this was, because a lot of the discussions they keep talking about, like the World Cup, in the Freedom of Information Act, it's a lot of emails and text messages between LA Galaxy and different employees in the city, at different employees at different levels. And very little of those discussions were about LA Galaxy 2, and most of those discussions were really about the World Cup and having that facility for World Cup training purposes. And yeah, so when I saw the figure, and when that figure came out, that they were talking about $105,000 per day renting it out as a training facility, I'm like, well, yeah, suddenly this makes sense, because, you know, the final of the darn tournament's probably going to be in LA, I would imagine. So you're going to be able to rent that thing out for 30 days at $100,000 a pop, compared to $200,000 right now as it stands for an entire year. Oh, man, that's a no-brainer because this is, you know, in the purest form of capitalist thinking, that's a no-brainer financially if you're the city. You know, why would you turn that down?
You shouldn't, as if you're, you know, from a business standpoint. I don't know, or I if it was just, if LA Galaxy wasn't involved and they were like, this is what we want to do, like the city was like, hey, like, this is something we talked about. Great, I get it. I mean, it sucks, but I get it. But the rest of it is fishy and is slimy, and it is just yet another stupid battle in the U.S. soccer wars. And I'm tired. Like, this MLS and all of it, we can go, you know, go back through the soccer wars, NASL 2, all that crap. It's just like, we are what's holding this sport back. Like, that, all of that is what's holding the sport back. The sport is like, the business people are holding the sport back in this country. And it's like, you guys could be making more money if you guys stopped the soccer wars and figured out an actual, you know, system that works, and minor, using like the MLB method of, you know, MLS and then minor league feeder teams is not the answer. It is not the answer. And this constant sniping that MLS is starting to do with MLS Pro Next or whatever, Next Pro or whatever that stupid font jersey crap is, it's just like, it's not needed. Like, we didn't need another league like this. Like, I mean, granted, I'm glad that they're doing their own developmental thing, but poaching independent teams and now stadiums from independent teams, it's just, this is all just unnecessary. And it would be nice to, like, cover this sport even in a general sense, or just, you know, pay attention to this sport in a general sense and not have to deal with this every year and just all the time. Like, I just want to be able to watch my team and not have to worry about, like, half the opposition losing stadiums or folding or this, that, and the other. I just want to watch my team play. But if you're not in MLS, then you don't get to do that.
You know, the whole thing, like, there's two thoughts to this that I thought were interesting. Like, either, first of all, if a one-time cash infusion of like, what, it basically comes out to about maybe $3 million, right? That's how much extra you'd be getting the year the World Cup will be in the United States for a month's worth of training at that facility. Let's say it's 2 months, right? Because, you know, teams get there a little early, get acclimated, that kind of stuff. Maybe somebody makes it their home base for training sessions going into the World Cup. So, you know, maybe it's more than a month, right, that facility would be used. So let's just highball it. $6 million. For 1 year, you get $6 million in rental fees from that facility, more than you would normally. That's it? That's not a lot of money. And if the city can basically get convinced to kick out two soccer teams for a, you know, to replace those two with a team that will have no fans, all for the chance at a $6 million payout or $3 to $6 million payout years into the future for 1 year, that's just, that's a weird decision on the city's part if they're that cheap, that they're willing to do that for so little, which kind of takes you down to some dark roads of like, you know, so the, what's the real motivation here? Is there more to the story? Who's the squeaky wheel that's kind of getting this thing moving? Who's got the greasy hands? You know, somebody brought up a funny idea. It's like, so is the LA Galaxy owner like a registered lobbyist? Because isn't that like city municipal code? Like, should we start talking to a district attorney about this? Like, what's going on here? It's going to be interesting to see where that goes, that conversation. But yeah, the update today was that the city is still not talking to Orange County, apparently. Supposedly. And I don't know. Call me crazy, but if I was an ownership, especially after the meeting that happened a few weeks ago, I would be basically at City Hall like every day talking to every one of them. Every one of like the commit. I mean, I would be in their face all the time. Hey, let's get this done. Hey, why aren't you talking to me? But if their idea of engagement is I'm going to send you an email and then just not follow up on that, or like, it's weird how in some ways how like lackadaisical that feels. But the article that Orange County wrote and posted on their website today is kind of, that's the impression. Is that, well, we sent them an email like after that last city council meeting, and they said they'd get back to us, and we haven't heard anything since. And it's like, I hope you sent more than just the one, because if that's all you did, I mean, that's not a lot of pressure. And apparently they're down to like one chance. Well, they're billing it as one chance left. Because there's another meeting basically next week about this, or just in general, and they're afraid that that's when the decision's going to get made and they're going to get kicked out. I mean, another one bites the dust, I guess. Welcome to American soccer, where MLS wants to own the entire pyramid. They want all the money going into them alone.
Again, they want the Major League Baseball model. They just want MLS up top and then just a bunch of minor league teams that are owned and it's by MLS, and it's just gross. I don't want it.
Yep. Well, I mean, from their perspective, it's like, you know, we're spending so much money to get into the league. The only way to make the money back, because, of course, nobody watches the sport in America unless you're buying a ticket and going to the game itself, but that's not enough people with enough money to eventually get your money back as an investor. The only way that you can try and position yourself is if you own the entire pyramid, so literally every dollar spent on soccer is going into your pocket in some capacity. You know, and that's, unfortunately, that's the cost of Major League Soccer right now, is that that's the animal they've built. When you're spending, you know, $1 billion or whatever on a stupid franchise fee, the only way to get that money back is to literally try and own the entire soccer landscape in the country, because you need every dollar you can going into your pockets to try and give you even a remote chance at getting your money back on that investment, because that's the only way to do it.
What do you think the constituency is for a Senate run if my whole thing is about revoking anti-monopoly or antitrust legislation and removing an exemption from sports leagues so we can just wipe MLS off the monopoly off the map?
More than likely, Florida Power and Light would just find the other one Endonino that exists like in the United States and put him up as a or put her up as a candidate and just to confuse the voters.
Yeah, that's probably you're accurate. You're accurate. That's very true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? It's a shame how just completely corrupt everything is. Like literally everything everywhere at every level is just corrupt disgustingness.
Yep.
It's
well, this is a good turn.
It's so bad. Everything is corrupt. It's so gross.
We're still just talking about MLS.
Oh yeah. Totally. 100%. Yes. Smile. Ay, ay, ay. Well, the Rowdies are in the top four, so that's good. I mean, that's true. Just another corrupt thing is the Rowdies getting all the calls for every game. They're scoring every goal because the goals are just wider in Florida, you know?
Yep. Well, there's the East Coast bias, and
yep.
We always get the calls because we're the league's favorite.
Yes. Yes, because there's league bias, because it's all corrupt.
Yep.
Yep. Exactly. See? You just can't escape it. Everything is corrupt.
I agree. All right. Got anything else?
No. The world's ending. It's great. No, I'm just kidding. Table's pretty much where we were last week.
Yep.
Ultimately. You know, teams at the top won, teams at the bottom lost, and there's a bunch of teams in the middle that drew. No movement to consist of as far as the USL Eastern Conference is concerned. So, yeah, I mean, things are kind of right where they were a week ago. So, just got to keep... I mean, you got to keep winning games, and you just have to see if who... And this is what we've been saying for a while. You just keep winning games that you can as the Rowdies... And you just have to see what other teams drop points, if any of them. And just you're just going to find out what seed you're in at the end. Like, there is no... It's not like we can expect Louisville to just drop off the face of the earth or Memphis to just drop off the face of the earth and us to just jump into first place. That's just not happening. That's just not going to happen. So... Yeah, I mean, we could end up winning out the rest of the year and it won't matter. We'll still be in third or whatever, you know, because if the other teams are winning out, then we'll finish in third or fourth. You know, it's just one of those things where there's not a whole lot of things moving. The playoff picture has been pretty much determined for something like, I don't know, 7 weeks. It feels like we've kind of known what the seven playoff teams were going to be. So not a whole lot there. Not a whole lot there.
I think we'll get second.
Oh, you do, huh?
Yep, I think we'll end up in second place in our conference.
Well, that would be nice. That would definitely be nice. Well, the Rowdies are in Charleston this weekend, which, man, did that feel like that came out of nowhere. Everybody's always used to going to Charleston, but there's been so much stuff going on right lately that I don't even know if there's really any kind of group at all going up to Charleston this time.
I haven't seen anything, but I haven't really been on much, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so last quarter derby. That'll be fun. That'll be cool. And then... The other, oh, you know, that's actually an important news update. They announced the 75-10 club today, the Tampa Bay Rowdies. They'll use it as a way of honoring folks who have had long and lasting impacts on the Tampa Bay Rowdies over the years. The inaugural class of this 75-10 club is going to be Mike Connell, Perry Vanderbeck, and Keith Savage.
Yeah, I think it's like the Bucks. It's basically like the Bucks Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Just
it's It's our third attempt at trying to like retire jerseys without retiring them this time.
But like I love this idea, right? Like, you know, it's you can it's something that can happen every year or so. You can pick from different, you know, years and just honor them over as they deserve. And it doesn't like with retiring a jersey like that reach one, I think it's dumb in soccer especially.
Yeah.
But it's such a high bar that you leave out so much other history. And I think it's a good way to also like bridge those gaps. Like we can honor, you know, somebody from the original team, give a little backstory that night on the screen, you know, introduce them and just teach a new generation the history and just connect through it all. So I absolutely love this idea. And I expect it'll continue on it for the future. And like, I'm excited for it. I heard rumors about this stuff happening when before, and I don't know if you just lost my there we go. That work? I could see on my board that my mic was dying.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. But as I think this will work. It's a great thing. I heard about it, I think last year, that this was in the works, and I'm glad they were able to get it done, because I just think connecting to our to the roots beyond just the old NASL days, like or the NASL 2.0 days, and going back to the original is great. Like, you know, some people, blah, 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 it's a different team, but they can suck a butt. The history runs deep here. We have fans from the original team that are still watching. I think we should do our best to honor the legacy, and the whole legacy lives now thing is the perfect hashtag and like rallying cry and perfect time to do something like this.
Yeah, totally agree. So yeah, that'd be fun. That's going to be something coming up here in the next couple weeks, because obviously the Rowdies are on the road for a little bit here. So we'll be looking forward to that when that comes around.
Yeah, I'll be at that one. I'll actually be back at Al Link for that one.
And the best part's going to be is I think that's the next Rowdy's home game in general. So that's going to be not only like a cool night for a lot of things, that's going to be when the Mob puts up its Lucky M. Kasana TIFO.
That is true.
So that'll be a really special night all the way around, I think.
Yeah, that'll be good. Everybody should be there. Buy your tickets now.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in tonight. As always, we appreciate your listenership and your interactions on all the social medias. We appreciate that as always. Thank you to Wolfface for the great introductory music, to Radio St. Pete Online for this platform to do a live online show. We appreciate Corrigan's and Shamrock for giving us a location to do live on location shows when the opportunity presents itself. We always love coming down to your guys' establishments with the Unused Substitutes crew. If you're listening to our show, please give us a share, give us a subscription, a rating on whatever platform you're listening, a review. Helps get every little bit you can do can help get us in front of other like-minded Rowdies or USL folks that might be interested in hearing what we've got to say. If you want to take that friendship to another level, Patreon is the number one place to go ahead and do that. Simple monthly donation system. Go as low as $1 a month. Goes a long way to helping us pay for the subscription costs we use for this for this podcast and for replacing any broken instrumentation on a moment's notice. It goes a long way, and every little bit helps. We do appreciate that. As we mentioned in the beginning of the show, our Patreon executive producer on the evening is David Morales. So thank you, as always, for that continued support. And thank you, finally, to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier for USL, MLS, and US Soccer. Get your scarves at roughneckscarves.com. Daniel, it was fun.
It was. It's good to be back.
Yeah.
We should do this again next week.
We will, in fact, because I think Matt is again out next week thanks to a volleyball thing going on. So it's just you and me again.
Well, even if he was back, I'd be here. I'm back for a bit.
I'm back, baby.
Make sure we're trying to get the schedules right and life calm down a little bit. So, but I'll be here next week.
Good. All right. Well, to everybody listening, you guys have a great rest of your night, and we will pop back in next week. Thank you, yep. And have a wonderful evening.
The rowdies are near, the rowdies are near.